All right, our last section that we are going to be talking about today are storylines of the season. So going into each game, you know, what are the storylines going into each game? And some of them obviously are going to be potential storylines, depending on how games previous to that have shaken out, you know, things like that. But we're gonna kind of go pretty much in chronological order, I think, Brian, as far as what the storylines are.
Well, yeah, just kind of, you know, we have that thing that we went over. I feel like it's just going to be one of those things where just the themes, just kind of order what we talked about. And it's kind of in order, but kind of not. But it's just the things that we look at and say, what are the big storylines of the season? What are the things that I'm most excited about, or I think we're going to talk about the most from the season, and just kind of have some fun with it, man. Just, you know, like you said, I think it looks like that way. It looks like it's chronological because the first one is.
Well, that's true.
Mike Elko versus Marcus Freeman.
Yes.
You know, round two, because you have two of the last three Notre Dame coordinators before he was hired. Two of Brian Kelly's last three defensive coordinators. Two guys that have done very good jobs. They're both going into their third year as head coaches. Obviously, Mike Elko is in a new school. Marcus Freeman's at the same, you know, same school. Two great defensive minds. And also the aspect of what are they trying to establish?
Right.
Elko is trying to lay a foundation. Freeman's trying to take that next step and kind of what the win over each other can do. Like, what can a win for A&M over Notre Dame in game one of Mike Elko's tenure? I mean, that's a great way to start off his tenure, Vince. I mean, absolutely, a great way. And then you look at the rest of their schedule, there's a chance they go into late October undefeated. They play McNeese State in game two. They play at Florida in game three. I got to think if you're good enough to beat Notre Dame, you're going to beat Florida. Then you get Bowling Green in game four. They're 4-0 at that point in time if they beat Notre Dame. Then they get Arkansas in Dallas. They get Missouri at home. Then they have a bye week. You're going into a road game at Mississippi State on October 19th, undefeated, 6-0. Maybe you win that game. Then you got LSU at home. It's very winnable at South Carolina, home against New Mexico State, at Auburn, home against Texas. Like, you beat Notre Dame, you're going on a run, in my opinion.
Sure.
And then what does that do for recruiting? This is a huge game for A&M. And then for Marcus Freeman, it's like, okay, we're now in year three. You know, it's now time to start winning these type of games. We're trying to send a statement to the SEC. You know, you know, we came down to play one of your teams. We took them behind the woodshed. We're a title contender. You know, we're going to have that year three jump that everybody talks about. This is the game you got to show that. There's going to be – and then, of course, game day is going to be there. And then what does that do for Notre Dame's recruiting? You know, like, this is a team that's a top 5 to 8 recruiting team every year. What's it going to say for that? Notre Dame's trying to get a much bigger impact than the state of Texas. You're going to have a ton of kids in the 26th class that Notre Dame's recruiting. They're going to be at that football game.
Absolutely.
And what is your statement to them? Okay. You know, you don't think A&M's going to try to flip to Nook Hines if he were to commit to Notre Dame? Let's just say, and I don't know if he's going to do that, but let's say he does. You don't think A&M might try to flip him and use that game as evidence? Or when they try to flip him, or when Texas tries to flip him, if Notre Dame got him, that you look back and be like, hey, did you guys see what happened when we went down to Texas and played them Aggies? You know what I mean? Like, nah, you don't want to do all that mess. This is where you need to be. So those are all things that I look at and I say, hey, man, it's like, this is a big game. I mean, this is a big game. And to your point, Vince, as you said it earlier, the story of your season begins to be defined with this game.
Oh, yeah.
Like last year, you didn't really know anything about Notre Dame until week three. Correct. And you really didn't know what kind of team they were until week five.
Right.
Now, it's like you're going to know week one to some degree.
Right.
You're going to learn something about this Notre Dame football team to some degree.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Yeah, there's still going to be some growth opportunities, obviously, for Notre Dame after week one. But this game is such a – it sets the precedent for the season. It just does, right? Because if they lose, again, razor-thin margin the rest of the way, can Marcus Freeman coach them to 11 straight victories? I mean, that's going to be the question, right? Or is it going to be a win and that you kind of – I'm not saying you take a deep breath, but you kind of do, right? Because everything's been leading up to this first game.
Confirmation of who you think you are.
Absolutely. And look, they're not going to be a finished product after game one. Nobody's saying that. There's going to be issues, right, that we're going to be able to dissect. And that's when you want to tune in on Sunday, because when we're doing upon further review, we're going to kind of dig into it a little bit. But you're going to feel a lot better about yourself if you're Notre Dame and if you're a Notre Dame fan, if they go and they take care of business the way that they should at Texas A&M, hostile environment, all of those different things. And you're going to put some, not all, some of the criticism to bed in one game. I just think that you will. Now, there's going to be obviously there's more road bumps as the schedule wears on and all of those different things. Yes, 100%. But everything seems more manageable if you win game one. Everything just seems more manageable if you win that first one.
You can go to the next one.
Oh, all right.
You nailed it, so, man. Hey, buddy.
Love it. Okay, beautiful. So our next potential storyline is, how good is Florida State and USC going to be this year, and how are they key to the schedule?
Yeah, so to me, Vince, this comes into – how is Notre Dame's schedule going to be viewed by the playoff committee?
Yeah.
Right? Like I think A&M's going to be a good team. I laid out their schedule. That's, to me, a minimum 8-win team. That's an 8-9-win team. And if they're competitive against Notre Dame, like for A&M, their margin for error in the Notre Dame game is a little wider. They don't actually have to beat Notre Dame, in my opinion, to kind of get some momentum. If they go toe-to-toe with a preseason borderline top-5 team, that's like, hey, man, like, you know, that's kind of where Notre Dame was. Remember the whole – man, we almost beat this really good team. We are pretty good. Let's go out there and show it. Let's take that next step. Notre Dame has to win. A&M just has to play well, even in a loss. Hey, you lost at home by a field goal to a top-5 team that everybody thinks is a playoff team this year. You know what I mean? You can then use that, Vince. So ultimately, but that's not the game you're going to be determined by, because that's August 31st.
Right.
USC and Florida State are both November games. That's going to have a way bigger impact on how you're viewed by the committee. And if Florida State's, you know, 8-4, 9-3, and you pounded them at home, if USC's 7-5 and you pounded them on the road, they're going to look at your schedule if you have a loss or two and be like, yeah, but you didn't beat anybody. And so that's a big thing for me. Like, if Notre Dame's an 11-1 team and they lose to one of those teams, they better hope that the other team and A&M and Louisville are all pretty good. Because at the end of the day, the committee has shown, for the most part, they don't care as much about who you lost to. They care about who you beat. And that's going to be the key is you say, well, Florida State and USC, we know are big names, but it doesn't mean that they're good teams. And Notre Dame needs them to be, to me, 9 to 10 plus win teams. And that's like they Notre Dame needs Florida State to be as good as you and I think they're going to be, Vince. You know, 1 to 2 loss team, ACC championship game, right. That kind of thing.
You've got to have something
right
to hang your hat on with your schedule, right? I mean, you have to, and they're going to bank on obviously winning those games if you're Notre Dame, right? But, you know, you would love nothing more than Florida State to win the ACC championship or at the very least be in the ACC championship game. And you want USC to be able to navigate that gauntlet of a schedule and come out with more wins than losses. You know what I mean? You have to. Because right. If you don't, the committee, they look at resumes, man. They do. They look at your resume and they see what you've done and what you haven't done.
Right.
And if those teams aren't as good as they should be, Notre Dame's going to have a hard time. They're going to have a hard time, you know, when it comes to, I'm not saying necessarily making the playoff, but I'm saying seeding is super important. We talked about it in the last segment, right? Would you rather be the number 5 seed playing at home against the worst team in the playoff and then the next round playing the worst conference champion? Or do you want to be the 8-9, you know, realm hosting maybe an Oregon, for example, or I don't know, a Penn State? I'm just coming up with teams that are going to be towards the top of their league, but not win it, right? Do you want to host an Oregon or a Penn State, or do you want to host?
And then you got to go play
whatever
number 2 seed.
Exactly.
In the second round.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference. And what it's going to be splitting hairs. It is going to be. If you're 11-1 and those teams aren't what they should be, now you're splitting hairs. Well, Notre Dame didn't. Who did they beat? You know, that's going to be the conversation. Who did they beat? And who did they lose to, right? If you're 11-1, because 12-0 takes care of itself. Who they beat
going to matter. I mean, look,
absolutely. We talked about
Clemson in 2017. You know, Clemson in 2017 lost a game to a 4-8 football team, right? I mean, so, like, that's terrible. But how'd they get in? They beat a number 10 Auburn that season. You know, they beat a Virginia Tech team that was a 9-win team that year. You know, Auburn ended up being 10-4 that year. Auburn played for the, because remember in 2017, Auburn beat Georgia in the regular season badly. And then Georgia beat him in the rematch of the SEC title game. That was a really good Auburn team, you know, that Clemson beat that year. They beat a ranked NC State team on the road. They beat that Miami team that pounded Notre Dame at home, that won 10 games that year. Miami was 10-1 when Clemson beat him in the ACC title game. So why did Clemson get in, even though they lost to a 4-8 Syracuse team? Because they had 4 great wins. That's the key. The danger that Notre Dame has with the schedule as the layout that it is, and this is kind of what we go back to, I don't think right now you can make the case that Notre Dame's schedule is soft. It's not hard, but it's not soft. If it becomes soft, it's because these two teams aren't good. That's what will hurt Notre Dame. Like, right. I don't see any world where Georgia Tech wins 10 games or Stanford goes out games or Miami of Ohio goes 11-1, wins the MAC, goes 12-1. Like, I don't see that. I don't see any universe where any of the teams below the top 4 are way better than we think.
If you're hanging your hat on a MAC champion and a Miami of Ohio, you know, win on your schedule,
right?
If that's what you're hanging your hat on. The argument's over. Like, it's not going to work.
But, like, Purdue's another one, Vince. Like, I like what they did in the portal this offseason. But, you know, Purdue's got to play at Wisconsin, at Illinois, Oregon at home, at Ohio State, home against Penn State, at Michigan State, at Oregon State and Notre Dame. Like, the odds of them being, like, some surprise 9-10 win team is slim.
Right, exactly.
So, like, after the top 4, there's no team that's going to shock like Syracuse did in 2018. That's the whole point. I don't know who that team is. Where Syracuse went from 4-8 to 10-win team, almost beat Clemson that year. Remember, that was Trevor Lawrence's first start. Yeah. And Chase Bright, Ryan and I talked about this the other day, Chase Bryce has to come off the bench and rally them to a victory. I don't see that team this year. So, again, if those two teams aren't good, your schedule is going to take a nosedive when it comes to a perception standpoint. So one of the big storylines this year, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you can hate on Florida State all you want. You can hate USC all you want. But just remind yourself,
for 11 I don't want to hear
you crying in November when Notre Dame's not getting love in the polls.
Yeah.
I mean, they're undefeated. Why are they behind a one-loss SEC team? They ain't beat anybody. Because exactly. Florida State sucked or was down and USC sucks.
Yep.
So this all this time you're rooting for Florida State to lose or rooting for USC to lose, just know that hurts Notre Dame.
Yep.
So one of the big storylines for me is how good is Florida State and how good is USC?
Yep.
And for Florida State, their schedule's not easy, but it's not hard either. For USC, they've got to manage that against a much tougher schedule. You know, Florida State's schedule is got some challenges on it. You obviously have Notre Dame on the road. You play at SMU. You play at Miami. But your other tough games, Georgia Tech in Ireland. You play Clemson at home. That'll be a tough one. North Carolina at home. It's of the top 10 to 12 teams, it's one of the easier schedules.
Yeah, for sure. There's only three ranked teams on that schedule.
They need them to be good. Yeah. They need Florida State to be because I think they play Miami after they play Notre Dame. Let me pull this
they
up.
They do not.
It's 2 weeks before Notre Dame.
Yeah, there it is.
They need them to have no more than one loss.
Yes.
And, you know, if you lose to Miami, you better have beaten Clemson. If you lose to Clemson, you better beat Miami.
Right.
Because if they've got one loss coming into that game, they're a top 10 to 12 team. That's good for Notre Dame. And then coming out of the Notre Dame game, their last two games are very winnable.
Yep.
They got a bye week. Charleston Southern and Florida.
Yes.
At home. Florida at home.
And then the ACC championship game, right, which they should be a part of.
If they're undefeated or one loss coming into that Notre Dame game and Notre Dame beats them, they're going to be ranked high and it's going to look good on your resume. USC is a little bit of a trickier situation, Vince, because
their schedule is a lot tougher.
Yeah, but a lot tougher. No, but it's not crazy. Like, people make it out to be like it's crazy. It's not crazy. They don't play Oregon and they don't play Ohio State. So there's a lot being made about how hard their schedule is. Okay, LSU on a neutral field, that should be a tough game, but I think USC can win that game. Utah State at home, bye week at Michigan. The at Michigan game is going to tell us a lot about USC.
I think it'll tell us a lot about Michigan too. But
very, very true. Very true. But I think it's a winnable game.
Sure.
And if USC is good, like, here's the thing. If USC is good, that's a winnable game.
Absolutely.
If they're not good, they'll lose. And that's true for a lot of these games. So you go down, then they get Wisconsin at home. If USC's good, they'll win that game. They play at Minnesota. If they're good, they'll win that game. Then they get Penn State at home. That's a tough game. But if they're good, they should win that game. At Maryland, win. Should be a win if they're good. Rutgers at home should be a win. At Washington, I mean, they battled Washington last year, Vince, and Washington was way better than they're going to be this year.
Yeah.
In my opinion, they went toe to toe with Washington last year, lost 52-42. They competed with Washington that game. Their defense is going to be way better than it is now, in my opinion. So I just look at it, man, and I'm like, I feel as if we're acting like USC's got this gauntlet schedule like Georgia, and it is tough.
Sure.
But at Washington isn't as tough this year as it was last year. Bye week, Nebraska at home at UCLA. I don't think UCLA is going to be very good. I could see a scenario where USC's 9-2, 8-3 coming into that game and probably ranked in the top 25. That's good for Notre Dame. It's better if they're 9-2, because if they're 9-2 against that schedule, they beat at least one of Washington, Michigan, LSU. Actually, they would have to. So if they're 9-2 coming in that game, LSU, Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State, Washington, Nebraska, they will have had to win four of those six games. That's a top 25 team. That's a statement win for Notre Dame. So Notre Dame needs those teams to be good. They don't have to be number one undefeated. If they are, that's great. But imagine Notre Dame playing on November 9th at home against an undefeated Florida State and an undefeated Notre Dame. Like, that is going to be a monster game.
Yep.
Probably two top five teams. Monster game. And, you know, that's a statement win in November. If USC's 9-2, they're a top 12 to 15 team.
Still a statement game in November.
Another statement game. So they really need those. So a big storyline for me is I am absolutely, whatever you think about USC from a rivalry, here's my deal. I love Notre Dame more than I hate USC. I love Notre Dame more than I hate Michigan. If it comes down to it and I need Michigan to win to make it better for Notre Dame when Notre Dame beats them, go blue. You know what I mean? Like, you need that. And that's how I feel about USC. I actually, like I said, I respect USC, but even if you hate USC, it's good for Notre Dame if they win.
Sure.
And then Notre Dame can end their season and smack them.
Yep.
And that's even sweeter. So that's kind of where I come down to it. There's like a bunch of chats. Don't ever say that again.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get on board.
But
with
you get the point,
that.
Though.
I totally get the point. Point.
It's good for Notre Dame.
I will sit there mute.
And
I say
so that's a big storyline for me. Are those two teams? And here's the other thing too is Vince is what's the like? There's this guy in the chat that's driving me nuts because he's just trolling to this point in time.
Negative?
But the one thing he said that is true is Notre Dame hasn't proven that they can win the big games. Well, we've said that. Now, you saying that and then predict them to lose to Army is that's why you're trolling because correct. You're saying some silliness.
Right.
Right? Because they have won big games. Marcus Freeman has won big games. The USC game last year was a big game. Clemson 2 years ago was in November a top five team. It's a big game. Can they do it consistently?
Right.
That's the question.
Correct.
And if those teams aren't good, then we still don't know the answer to that going into the playoff.
And can they do it in the postseason? Like that's right.
We don't know going into the playoff.
Right.
Like, have they been challenged enough now? Have you been challenged enough to go beat those top teams if Florida State and USC aren't good? The last time you played a really good team is August 31st. So for so many reasons, Vince, it's imperative that they be good, in my opinion. That those two teams be good. It's good for Notre Dame if those two teams are good.
So this next storyline kind of piggybacks off of the one that we just talked about. And this is the first time that Notre Dame has played a good Florida State team since 2014. How will they stack up?
I mean, look, it comes down to this, Vince. This is kind of the point that I've made about Florida State, right? Notre Dame is dominating this series recently. I mean, they just have. I believe it's now – Florida State leads the all-time series 6-5. Notre Dame has won the last three games, 41-38, 42-26, 42-13. The two games at home, so they've scored over 40 points each game. The last two games at home, Notre Dame dominated. But Florida State in 2021 was not very good. I think they finished that year 45-7, I believe, is what Florida State finished in 2021 when Notre Dame took them to overtime. In 2018, Notre Dame finished 5-7. And then what did I say the other one was? 2020. And in 2020, they finished 3-6. Notre Dame has not beaten a ranked Florida State team in a very long time, Vince. A very long time. Matter of fact, the last time Notre Dame beat a Florida State team with a winning record was 2002.
Oh, wow.
That's it. Because they lost in 2003. They lost in 2011 in a bowl game. They lost in 2014. Now, they've been competitive in those two losses, but I don't care about competitive. This is the first time you get to play a Florida State team where Florida State fans can't rightfully say, yeah, but we suck. And Notre Dame was good in all of those seasons. Notre Dame was in the playoff in 18 when they stomped Florida State. They were a playoff team in 2020 when they stomped Florida State. And they were an 11-1 team that played in the Fiesta Bowl when they beat Florida State in 2021. None of those Florida State teams had a winning record. So you've got to prove yourself that, yes, you can beat – you've proven you can beat Florida State. But can you beat them when they're good?
When they're good, yeah.
That's the question. And they haven't done that. And so that's why, like you said, they need Florida State to be good.
Sure.
But then they need to win that game. That's the other thing. It's like, okay, they're good, but then they wouldn't beat you. So be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
You know, they were pretty good, but, you know, they went out and beat you. So to me, that's why I think that's a huge game. And that's you know, that's very important as to why I think that this football team needs Florida State to be good, but then they need that statement win that, hey, we played a top 10 team and we handled our business. And then that's going to help recruiting in the state of the Florida in the South big time, big time.
Yeah, because you're right. Because the last 20 years, when they play Florida State, it's all, remember 93, remember 93, like that whole mantra. You know what I mean? And it was, you know, okay, 93 was great. I was 12. Let's just go beat. No, let's go beat the Florida State as they are right now in this incarnation. You know what I mean? Like that. It just, okay, cool. They've got the tomahawk on the side of the helmet. It's Florida State, but it's not Florida State. Like, come on, guys. So you're right. They need to be better. They absolutely need to be better for this game to actually mean something. And I'm really hoping that it means something this time around. And I think it will. I do. Yeah. I think it will. I think this is going to be a game that Notre Dame is going to be able to look back on when they win this game at the end of the season. They'll be like, we did that
right
in November. Like, show, you know, put some respect
this
on our
name.
This
is why we're the five seed.
Yes, right. That's exactly
and
right.
And if they do have a loss, if they lose to a Louisville, if they lose to a Texas A&M, if they get upset by a Georgia Tech for whatever reason, this is the kind of game that vaults them back up in that standing.
Absolutely. You know,
that's the
because
reality of it.
It is, but where it's located in the schedule is super important to me because there's that 11 in front of it. It's a November game. Those are the ones, not that A&M doesn't matter. I had it at number one, and that game matters. But this game matters because of where it's located. They got to win these games in November. You've got to remember, early on in Brian Kelly's tenure, probably pre-2016, they just weren't good in November. And that was a storyline that
You mean pre-Matt Bayless.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
exactly. It was, man, they just can't win games in November. They can't win the games in November. Then Matt Bayless showed up, and it was like, they can't lose games in November.
Like, even the year that they went undefeated in November, Vince, in 2012, like, all those teams sucked.
Yeah.
Like, none of those teams were good because they had beat Oklahoma at the end of October, and then they came out and they beat a 6-7 Pitt team and by three. They had to come back from down two touchdowns. Remember that? Boston College was 2-10. Wake Forest was 5-7, and then USC was 7-6. None of and they only beat them by nine. None of those teams were good.
Yeah.
In 2015, Notre Dame had a good record in November. They lost at the end of the year to a really, really good Stanford team, but they barely beat a really bad, if you remember, they barely beat a really bad BC team, which that dropped. Like, people talk about, well, they dropped out of the top four after they lost Stanford. No, they dropped out of the top four after they had that ugly five turnover, three of them in the red zone win over a 3-9 Boston College team, right? Like, that's why you lost that game and or lost the top four. And then they won by 21, 28-7, but they played poorly against a Wake Forest team that went 3-9. They beat a Pitt team that was 8-5. That was a nice win, you know, but like even when they were good, they weren't good in November.
Yeah.
You know, like the best they probably ever played in November was Brian Kelly's first year. Remember when they beat Utah and they beat Army? Like, but even then, it's like, were any those teams really that good outside of Utah?
Right.
So you're gonna have to be good in November, and that's a storyline we didn't have on there, Vince. But you're gonna have to be good in November.
Absolutely.
This is gonna be one of your toughest November slates in a long time. If those two teams are, if our second storyline is true, proves to be fruitful.
Absolutely.
So that's that's a big one.
So our next storyline is going to be
kind of in line, right?
Yeah,
still kind of in line.
Yeah. You know, that's what we do. So this is round three versus DJ Uiagalelei and his second team, obviously, that he's bringing to Notre Dame Stadium. He's 0-2, played really well in game one, didn't play so hot in game two. What are you going to get in game three from DJ? And I think when we're talking about DJ specifically, we can do a whole show on him and the expectations for him at Florida State and, you know, what he did when he left Clemson and what he did at Clemson and all of those different things. But it's funny because you and I have had this conversation many times about the pressure of being the starter and the pressure of being a backup. When he balled out at Notre Dame, he started that game, but he was not the starter.
He was a true freshman that took a playoff Notre Dame team to overtime.
Yeah.
And threw for over 400 yards in that game.
Balled out in that game, but he wasn't the starter. You know what I mean? Like, he was filling in. He was filling in for Trevor Lawrence, who was there in street clothes, and no pressure. Just go out there and play, you know? He comes back 2 years later. Now, granted, different Notre Dame team. Now you're entrenched as a starter. Didn't play so hot.
Right.
So I think there's a little bit of that, like, starter pressure and coming off the bench, a.k.a. backup pressure.
Yeah.
Those are two different things. And so now you've got another DJ coming in and this is his third time to Notre Dame Stadium. He's been successful here as an individual. He's been not successful here as an individual, never won as a team. What does he bring with this Florida State team that he's bringing into Notre Dame Stadium? That's going to be a very interesting storyline going into this game.
I think DJ was way overhyped coming out of high school, and now I think he's a little underrated. I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, yes, he played poorly against Notre Dame, and Benjamin Morrison ate him up, and the pass rush ate him up. And that kind of rocked him the rest of the year. He didn't recover well from that. He didn't play great against Louisville. He didn't play, you know, he was good against Miami, didn't play well against South Carolina, and then his career is basically over. Like, that was the beginning of the end for him. But, you know, 2 weeks before that, Vince, he took them on the road and beat a 10-win Florida State team, and he passed for 3 touchdowns in that game against Florida State. So they were, people forget too, that was a November game. They were undefeated. They were a top 5 team. They won the ACC that year. So it's like he was never as good as people made him out to be, but he was also never as bad as people are making him out to be now. And that Oregon State team, I mean, he did some nice things at Oregon State last year. The thing that Jonathan Smith did well is Jonathan Smith said, hey, I can't ask this kid to carry my team. I can't. It's not fair. He's not that kind of quarterback. I know his ranking was such and such, but he's just not that. He's not a carry your team kind of guy. He is a, we need to have him be a good leader, make some plays with their legs, throw the ball down the field. And I think there's a lack of structure to the Florida State offense that's going to be good for him. You know, this is, I mean, Jordan Travis would dominate a game and go 12 of 27. Yeah. You know, I mean, just, it was just a little bit more open, and you can live with some of those mistakes that DJ is going to make, in my opinion. And so that's where I feel as though it's like this kind of, are you going to get the kid that ripped Notre Dame up in 2020? I don't think so. He's never been that kid since then. I mean, if you remember, because we forget that was not his first start. He played very well against Boston College the week before. Him and Phil Dracovic had a great duel in a game that Clemson won by 6. It's a great duel. And he passed for 439 yards against Notre Dame. I'm looking at his schedule, Vince, or his stats, Vince, in the 3 years since. So he passed for his first career start, he passed for 342 yards and 2 touchdowns. His second career start on the road against a playoff team, he passed for 439 yards and 2 touchdowns. Since then, as a full-time starter in 2021, as a full-time starter in 2022, and as a full-time starter in 2023, he has had one game of over 300 yards. That's it. He was never that guy. Right. And all that did was put all the hype that was already on him as a 5-star grew through the roof.
Yeah.
To where after that year, like, you know, they're going to be fine at quarterback without Trevor Lawrence because they've got DJ. And it's like, really?
Well, and that fan base was already, I don't want to say spoiled, but they had a pretty good succession program going at quarterback.
And here's the thing too, Vince, people forget it wasn't just Trevor and Deshaun. I mean, Taj Boyd was really good at Clemson. You know, Charlie Whitehurst was not a bad quarterback. And then you go back to the Rich Rod era with Woody Dantzler. He was a first 1,000 quarterback in college football history. First guy to rush and pass for over 1,000. No, hold on. He was, I think, the first guy to rush for over 1,000 and throw for over 2,000 in college football history. So like, Clemson's had some quarterbacks. They're a tad spoiled at quarterback with that type of guy, and they thought DJ was going to be that next guy, and he was a bad fit for that system. He goes to Oregon State, and that pressure's off of him. Dude, we're a running football team with a great defense, and I don't think Florida State's going to ask him to be as much as what he was at Clemson. Now, but he's got to play better than he did 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, like, what version of him do you get? And at the end of the day, the one thing that's been true is when he doesn't get pressured by the defense, he plays well.
Sure.
When he does get pressured by the defense, he does not play well.
And that's going to be – I mean, look, we're going to break down that game, obviously, leading up to it, and we're going to talk about all the matchups and everything. But, you know, on that side of the football, that's what it's going to come down to. Can they get him off platform? If they get DJ off platform, this is a win for Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. It really is that simple to me, because if you let him throw from a clean pocket, he's going to rip you apart, because he's good enough quarterback to do that. But if you can put pressure on him and show him some exotic stuff and really, if you can get pressure with 4 and drop and do all these different things. If you can do that, he's gonna struggle. He'll make some plays, but he's not a mobile guy who's gonna really hurt you with his feet.
Like he's a good runner, but he's not shifty.
Right.
Like he's physical and he's got some speed for that size, but he's not a make a bunch of guys miss in the pocket kind of guy.
Right.
But but even beyond that, he just doesn't handle it well.
Correct. When the bullets are flying,
mentally he doesn't handle it well when there's a lot of pressure on him.
And that's what they did to him last time he was here at Notre Dame. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I can tell you that much, because it does kind of play into Notre Dame's hands.
Because he'll ultimately be the key to how good Florida State's going to be this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%. I wonder, though, as I'm looking at their schedule, how many defenses are going to be able to do that with consistency.
Clemson, you know,
and
maybe Miami.
Right.
Maybe.
So
I actually like DJ. I think he's a good kid. He strikes me as a good teammate.
I agree.
I want him to be successful.
I think he comes from a good family, from what I can tell. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want to piss off Big Dave. You know what I mean? So
No.
I mean, in all seriousness, though, he seems like a good kid, and I just think he had too much put on him early on.
Yes, I agree.
And there was no way he's going to be able to live up to, like, the worst thing he could do was play as well as he did his first two starts.
The hype train just left the station at that point. I mean, if he was going to come in and be just a first-year starter without having those two starts under his belt, I think it would have been a lot different, because I think the expectations would have been tempered a little bit.
Yeah.
But remember, you know, Clemson was flying pretty high at that point too. And so the expectations still would have been high, but maybe not quite as high. So
the next one, Vince, we kind of already talked about in the beginning. It's how will Notre Dame and USC have something on the line?
Sure.
And the point being, like, they haven't played a lot of games where there's something on the line for both teams.
Correct.
That's where this storyline comes from, because in 2023, USC had something on the line and Notre Dame had something on the line, and Notre Dame played very well. In 2022, USC had something on the line. Notre Dame didn't, other than just pride and bowl placement and all that. But Notre Dame already had three losses. They weren't playing for anything. 2021, USC wasn't playing for anything. They weren't that good. 2019, Notre Dame was pretty good. USC wasn't. 2018, Notre Dame was really good. USC wasn't. Then the last time they played and there was something on the line, 2017, Notre Dame smacked them. 2016, Notre Dame season was over by that point in time.
Oh,
2015, I think it was like an 8-6 USC team. 2014, Notre Dame had quit by that point in time. Their season was also that was the end of. They were beat up. That was a huge props to Steve Sarkisian. He could have hung 70 on Notre Dame that game if he wanted to, and he called off the dogs. And then Brian Kelly repaid that in 2017, because Chip Long wanted a couple more touchdowns, and Brian Kelly was like, "Run the ball." You remember that when he threw the flea flicker when
they were up
34-14 and Kelly was like, mm-mm. You know what I mean? Like, he remembered Chip wasn't here in 2014. Kelly remembered, in my opinion, what Sark did in 2014. He could have really embarrassed Notre Dame. Remember they went on like that 20-plus play drive that took like almost the whole fourth quarter?
Yeah.
He could have hung three more touchdowns on the board if he wanted to in that fourth quarter. And so I've always kind of had a little bit of a respect for Sark. Like, you know, that's a game you could have really embarrassed your rival.
Sure.
And he's like, look, 49-14 is enough. You know what I mean? But they just haven't had a lot of games where there's a lot on the line for both teams. Will this – it has not happened at USC since 06. I mean, think about that, because every time they've played at USC, one of them has not been very good.
Sure.
And so that's something. It's been a long time. Actually, I'm going to go back and look at this, Vince. I wanted to know when the last time Notre Dame and USC played at the Coliseum when they were both ranked. I bet you it's been a while, and I'm going to see if I can find it here. So, see, Notre Dame, so let's find out. 2012, they were not both ranked. 09, 08, 07, 06 was the last time that Notre Dame and USC played when at the Coliseum when they were both ranked. That's the last time that happened. So it's like literally the last time a game in the Coliseum mattered for both teams.
Wow.
Brady Quinn and I think, was it Matt Leinart, the quarterback on that team too?
Yeah,
Brady Quinn and Matt Leinart were both still in college, I believe. So yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a minute. So that's going to be an interesting storyline.
Yes. And then of course, I mean,
wait a minute, hold on. Notre Dame wasn't ranked last year when they played, were they? in 2022? Actually, let me look at that. I don't think Notre Dame was ranked when they played. They might have actually just cropped into the top. Actually, they were ranked when they played in 2022. So it'd be the last time they were both ranked in the top 10. Because in 2022, Notre Dame was 15th and USC was 6th.
Okay.
But Notre Dame already had three losses, yeah. And that was their fourth loss. So, yes, 23. But the last time they were both ranked in the top 10 was 2006.
It's a long time ago.
Long time.
So our next storyline is one we've kind of already touched on as well, but it's revenge versus Louisville.
Yes. This is a big one because, Vince, this is going to tell me a little something about this football team.
Absolutely.
Look, I understand and I'm all about Marcus Freeman's you have to play one game at a time. Every football coach on the planet has to have that mindset. You can't have your players looking forward. Having said that, I do think the great teams, the teams with that edge, still don't focus on just that game. You don't think the Notre Dame players, I mean, the Notre Dame players from back in the 88 have said that. We remembered all the butt whoopings that Miami put on us. We remembered all of them. And then they were all kind of fuel to us going out playing that game. Now, it was still about the week of preparation. And I was talking to a buddy yesterday. I said, look, pregame speeches are very overrated when it comes to they can fire you up, but the first time you get punched in the mouth, that's kind of out of there. Notre Dame didn't beat Miami in 1988 because Lou Holtz gave a great speech. It might have fired them up coming out of the tunnel.
Sure.
They won that game because of a great week of preparation and then executing the game plan. That's why they won that game, because they were just a better team that day, not because of Lou Holtz's speech, right? It was the preparation that went into the game. And so when I look at this, like, those things, it's still about the execution. But if you can have a little extra something inside of there, because, like, why did that pregame speech kind of fire them up? It was because of the history. The fight happened because of the history. It was, you keep trying to punk us. You punked us last year. You punked us the year before. You're not coming to our stadium and running through our group. You're not doing it. And so I want to see that this team has a little P&V in them. And it's exactly what we talked about Ohio State in 22, Vince. Like, I thought Ohio State was going to be fired up about – I mean, Michigan kicked your butt the year before. Then they talked trash about you the entire calendar year. And you went out in that next game that next year, and you were just like, just another game. Go through the motions. I want to see that this Notre Dame team has not forgotten about last year's game when they
exactly.
Like, that's going to tell me something. Just beating Clemson, just beating Louisville, you should beat Louisville at home. I want to see them kind of have a little bit of, like, I'm not going to lie to you. I want to see them kind of trash talking a little bit and then backing it up.
Sure.
I want to maybe see Marcus Freeman let Mike Denbrock put a couple extra in the end zone in the second half of that game, if they can. Like, Al Golden, you know, like, I want to see Al Golden in the third quarter. They don't get another yard. If they get past the line of scrimmage, I'm taking all of you out. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see a little bit of that in that game, because they took your soul a little bit last year. You got to regain that. You got to get that back. And so that's something to where it's like, okay, like, you know, where are you at with this? Where's your head at? Where's your pride at? Because any competitor can say, like, hey, I'm not worried about what happened last year. When you lose, you are.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
When you lose, you are. No, you can't. I'm sorry. You can't say that, you know, last year doesn't matter, especially these guys that started and were on the field for that. Anybody that says that is lying to you. I don't care. Or they're not a competitor. And if you're not a competitor, I don't want you on my team anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's a bunch of malarkey to keep it family friendly.
Yep.
Our final storyline that we're going to talk about today: can Notre Dame reignite its ACC dominance since they dropped two last year and almost lost another to Duke?
Yeah, because it was like, what, 29, something like that?
It was a ridiculous number in a row that they had won.
Regular season games that they had won.
Right.
Including that, two wins over Clemson. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because you beat them in 2020.
You had one loss in the playoff, but you had two in the regular season.
Well, you had two losses to Clemson. You had in the playoff, and then you also had the game against the ACC title game.
Right.
So it was like regular season games. The last time you lost an ACC game at home in the regular season was back in 2017 to Miami. And then you come in last year, and of course, all the ACC teams make a big deal out of this. You've kind of dominated that league. And I went back and looked, Vince, and the average margin of victory in those games was double digits. Like, wow. It wasn't even that they were just winning. They were winning, like, in most games, kind of convincingly. And then you go out last year, and you have a very big double-digit win at NC State, where it was closer than the final score, but you were clearly the better team.
Yeah.
That whole day. You never trailed. You were clearly the better team. And then you go out there and you almost lose to Duke. You need a bit of some breaks. Then you go get embarrassed on the road against Louisville. Double-digit loss. You bounce back with a blowout win over Pitt, who stinks. And then you go out again and you get smacked in the mouth by Clemson. Yeah, okay, great. You beat a bad Wake Forest team at home. But when Notre Dame played the last three games of the ACC schedule last year against good teams, they lost twice and should have lost another. And, you know, and so, yeah, they were all on the road, but there's a lot of road games that Notre Dame played from after the Miami game that they won. And so, to me, you have to – because when you start talking about seeding, Vince, let's say Florida State and Clemson are both really good, and let's say Florida State beats Clemson and gets the ACC title. They're 12-1. Clemson's sitting there at 11-1. Notre Dame's sitting there at 11-1. Their loss isn't to it. Let's say they lose to A&M early in the season, something like that. You need to look like, hey, we dominated the ACC, because that could be the difference between who gets the 5 seed and who gets the 6 seed.
It's the hair splitting that we talked about earlier. You've got to have stuff to hang your hat on. And while you're not in a conference, and I'm not in any way advocating that they should be, you still have to take care of common opponents. And whether they're actual common opponents or not, they at least have opponents that are in common.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's where the ACC thing but comes
into
play.
It's just got to look, who's the best team in the ACC?
Yeah.
Well, okay, it's Notre Dame. Yeah, I know Florida State won the ACC title, but did you see what Notre Dame did to them in November?
Exactly.
Right. Like, it's got to be that. Because that could be, like you said, Vince, it's the perception of where you are that could impact where you're seated. Because, like, if Notre Dame dominates the ACC, they're most likely a playoff team.
Yeah.
But where are they? 5? Are they 7? Are they 9? Are they 11? That could come down to your perception. And no, the ACC is not a great conference, which is exactly why you need to dominate it. And that's the key. And so that's going to be a final storyline. And you're going to have – and the thing is, Vince, you're getting two of the best teams in that league this year. So it's not going to be like a – you know, some years you don't get really good ACC teams. It just plays out that way.
Sure.
But this year you're getting the best preseason ACC – the defending ACC champs, preseason top 15 team. You're getting Louisville, who beat you last year, top 25 team.
I'm so glad you're on the schedule.
You're getting two of the best in the league. So now's your chance to say, hey, look, you got to come to our place now. And it's not going to go as well for you as it did last year when we had to go to your place.
Right.
So they're going to have to reestablish dominance in that league, in my opinion, Vince. And the next couple of years needs to get back to doing that. And this year's a great chance because you get to take on the big dog. And especially if Florida State beats Clemson, and now you then go handle business against Florida State, now it really looks good.
Opponent of an opponent. I mean, that's exactly what you want. Yeah. And that's, if your scenario is accurate and it's an 11-1 Clemson team and an 11-1 Notre Dame team, and Clemson lost to Florida State, Notre Dame beat Florida State.
Yeah. What would happen if they would have a win over Georgia? Or let's say that, you know, Clemson beats Florida State and loses to Georgia. They're 11-1. They play in a rematch, and then Florida State wins the rematch. But if you know, let's say they don't play in a rematch, but then Clemson beat Florida State by a field goal, Notre Dame beat them by 25. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of thing that starts mattering. Yes. And you say, well, the transitive property doesn't matter. But when you're putting a ranking together, that's all you have to go by.
It has to matter.
That's all you have to go by.
Yeah, right.
Right.
It's a data point that matters, you know, for sure.
Yep, absolutely.
So those are the storylines that we have as we sit here. Oh, go ahead.
We had a super chat that I wanted to
get to. Oh,
I didn't
know that. Okay, cool.
It's kind of a storyline related thing. So I kind of wanted to bring that up before we get to that.
All right, Rob Osgood, thank you so much for the super chat. Hey, guys, I know we talked about this before, but remind me, with the playoff this year, how would you deal with load management, or if at all?
I don't think you can ignore it, but I also don't like the idea of load management, because when I think load management, I think of the NBA.
Right.
You sit guys for games, you know, that's not what I want. What I want is, number one, in the non-big games, be willing to go a little deeper into your depth chart early.
Yes. Yep.
During the week of practice and during, you know, especially as you get into October, November. So, you know, like, do I say rest your starters against Virginia? Heck no. But do you maybe give your backups a, you know, do you really, does Howard Cross really need max reps on Tuesday and Wednesday of that game? He, right. you know, and so when you're blowing a team out, it's okay for Howard Cross only played 15 snaps in a game where you beat a team by 60, right? Because you're going to need him to play 60 when you play Florida State.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so like, so those type of things. So, and people say, well, you know, you take 10 snaps off a game per guy. That's fine. But it's also about the number of reps you're taking Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yes.
And so you've got to be,
we don't see,
right. You know, you've got to be smart about, you have to make sure your team is incredibly prepared. But that's why in practice, I may not only have a 4 or 5 man rotation with my ones during the week of practice at receiver. I may go 6 or 7, just take a little bit of that off, especially as you kind of get into the season. So that's kind of where I'm at. And then first chance you get, you're blowing a team out, you know, put your backup quarterback in. Don't take a chance of getting Riley Leonard hurt.
Right.
But I'm not putting too much. So it's more of thinking long term. I'm not sitting starters.
No.
I'm not, you know, any of that stuff, because again, you're jockeying for position. But the reality is Notre Dame's last game of the season this year is on November 30th.
Correct.
There's, I believe, 31 days in November. Correct?
No, 30.
There's only 30.
Yeah.
First playoff game's the 20th. That's one game, and then the next three games are on the 21st. You have 3 weeks off.
Correct.
After the USC game. That's where you rest.
Yep.
So, yes, I want to have some sense of, be smart. You don't need to play Howard Cross 45 snaps against Northern Illinois. You don't need to play Xavier Watts 70 snaps against Purdue unless it's a close game, but that's why you go handle your business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need Riley Mills to play 50 snaps against Miami, against Navy. You know what I mean? And then those, that's the other thing too, Vince, the one load management game thing I would have where I'm really even being more mindful of my defensive linemen and linebackers is the Navy and Army games. If there's still sure. one official option.
Yeah. Good
call. I am playing 10 defensive linemen against Army the week before USC. 10. I'm playing 6 interior guys, and I'm playing at least 10. I may play 12. I may have just 3 waves I'm throwing at Army in that game, because I'm not going to have Howard Cross have to play 60 snaps against Army. I'm not. And so it's stuff like that, but it's still with the intent of, we're going to win this game. We're going to win this game and blow this team out. And so if Howard only plays 20 snaps against Miami, Ohio, it's not because you had a 4-man rotation in the first quarter. It's because – yes, you have a rotation, but you put that team away, and now I'm not playing him in the second half, because right. he doesn't need to play in the third quarter against Miami of Ohio. I need to
with,
get – right.
Yeah, with as many games as the eventual national champion is going to have to play this year, right, with the expanded playoff and all those different things, I don't like the term load management, but the way that a coaching staff deals with
– you have to use your that, depth.
Yes, absolutely.
You have to use your depth.
The way they deal with that from game one all the way to game 17 or whatever number it ends up being is going to have an advantage. They're going to have an advantage on how the coaching staff deals with that. And again, I'm not saying to sit players
right.
and not play them in certain games like that. No, absolutely. That's but why I don't like the term rotation. Load management. Yes. And right. Notre Dame's roster, if we're talking now about Notre Dame specifically, Notre Dame has a deep roster.
Right.
They can go deep in their roster and take some of those snaps away, both in practice and in games, to have guys fresher when it comes to December. They absolutely have that, and you have to take advantage of that. And so the coaching staff that does that the best is going to have an advantage in the playoff and yeah. as they advance through the playoff. There's no doubt in my mind. No doubt.
Right. I mean, when you go through the season, Vince – It's you have to be smart about what games are like, look, guys, we're going to smack this team. Now, that doesn't mean you do what Brian Kelly did in 2018 against Ball State, where you just play you're having
right.
Tuesday, your third stringers are getting a bunch of reps. No, have a normal Tuesday practice, pull back a little bit on Wednesday, and just and like I said, if I'm normally a 4-man defensive tackle rotation in that Northern Illinois game, I'm going to get, you know, my fifth, sixth guy queued up a little bit early.
Sure.
that may be a game where I don't really care that RJ Oben plays much past second quarter. I'm going to get Bryce Young a little bit more work. I'm going to get, you know, that's a game where I don't need to play Jack Kaiser 60 snaps. I'm going to get Kingston a lot more work. I'm going to get Jalen Snead or Jaden Osbury a lot more work. I need to get Luke Talich in that game, and I need to get Adon Shuler in that game, and I don't need Xavier Watts to have 15 tackles against Northern Illinois. And so those are the things I look at and say, that's where I'm talking about. It's not sitting anybody. It's just use your rotation more.
Yes.
Because it's easier to kind of ramp it up against Texas A&M and then Louisville and then Florida State and then things like that. That's the key, Vince. And so, yeah, I'm not a big fan of load management because I think that just gives me NBA vibes and I hate it.
And it's like, oh, we're going to sit him for these two games or what? Like, no.
Got to make sure, though, however, that you're being smart. So say you've got the talent, use it.
Yes, exactly.
Use it.
Yes. We talk about the depth all the time at Notre Dame. Right. Use it.
Can't beat Northern Illinois by 40 with Cam Williams playing maybe 10 more snaps than he otherwise would.
Right.
Or with Jason Onye getting 10, 15 more snaps than he normally would or whatever the case may be, then you know what? You're not a very good football team. That's the key.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, that's going to.
Thanks for the super chat, man. Appreciate
that's great, Rob. Appreciate you very much. That's going to do it for this edition of the Irish Breakdown podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, hit that notification bell, share with your family and friends. Now is the time to jump on the boards too. Boards.irishbreakdown.com. All kinds of intel in there. We got official visits happening. There's stuff going on, people. And there's always stuff going on, and you're not going to know about it first if you're not on the boards. You'll know about it eventually, but if you want to be the person that's giving the information to people,
give people information unless they're on the boards. Keep that on the board.
All right, you're right.
Come on now.
Dang it.
But if you want to be in the know, if you want to be in the know,
right,
which people like, then you need to be at you need to be a premium member at boards.irishbreakdown.com.
Correct.
Ryan had a little intel piece on Ivan Taylor on the message board.
I mentioned that last time. Yes, yeah. I mentioned that last time. Mm-hmm. So make sure you check it out. Ryan's still putting in work over at IB, which we love. And so check it out. But that's going to do it for today. Make sure you check out tomorrow's show because we'll be back and we're going to be talking about all Americans. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
And a little buy, sell,
of course.
Hold.
Buy, sell, hold every Wednesday. But this coming tomorrow, we're going to talk all Americans at first. So we look forward to seeing you tomorrow afternoon. Tonight on the IB Nation Sports Talk, Ryan will be on to do a recruiting segment. There is a special guest that is also going to be on. And then, of course, Jesse and Sean will take you through rapid fire. And if you want to hear about Jesse's proposal, you're going to want to check out IB Nation Sports Talk. He finally popped the question. He finally decided to be an adult. So there you go. You can check that out as well. But for Brian, I'm Vince. We will talk to you tomorrow on Irish Breakdown Podcast. We'll be right back.